Welcome in to Inside the Icebox here on the ESPN Houston YouTube channel. Joe George, Jeremy Branham here with you. And today we are brought to you by, as for every show, Going Forward Blue Star Tequila. Blue Star Tequila is the world's first night harvest tequila. Blue Star Tequila is also intentionally unfiltered, additive-free, the way nature intended. Nothing added and nothing taken away. You can find it right here. See? Beautiful bottles of Blue Star Tequila. We're here to talk all things Houston Astros. There's a lot going on, Jeremy. There's a lot going on.
Are we unfiltered?
Yeah, we can be unfiltered.
Yeah, I think we're like the tequila.
Yeah, we're like the tequila. You don't swear, so you're not totally unfiltered, but you're pretty close. Your opinions are unfiltered.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I'm Mexican.
Fair.
So I think that helps.
That does. I'm not.
Yeah, it doesn't bode well for you.
The complexion, the red mustache, all that stuff, it helps.
I mean, Canelo Alvarez.
That's true. That's true. I forgot about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of my favorite sporting events of all time was at Minute Maid Park, now Daikin Park, when Canelo was fighting, and those morons opened the roof and it was raining.
Really?
Yep. It was unbelievable. They started opening the roof. It's raining in the middle of a fight, and they had to start closing. It was unbelievable. Obviously, we have a lot to get into. We'll start with the big news of the week is it's finally here. For the first time since 2022, Lance McCullers is going to pitch for the Houston Astros on Saturday. I was there in Chicago for the other station, covering the playoff game in which it was rained out. They played the next day. Lance McCullers is on the mound. He gets hurt against the White Sox. And now he returns against the White Sox.
It's a full circle moment.
Full circle moment for Lance McCullers.
Now, he pitched through injury after that.
He did.
But, like, that's the line of demarcation
we're
going with?
I think so. I mean, because he was off his schedule. He had worked out the day before. He got hurt in that game and just unraveled.
No, so. I would agree with that. Now, he did have that incident where he hit, like, the champagne bottle on his elbow. Remember that whole ordeal?
Yes.
And then he had, like, that mysterious, like, bandage on his finger with that, too. No, I'm happy for Mocha McCullers, though. Like, this is awesome. This really is. Like, I know that he's been banged on and ridiculed and he's stealing money, which was actually, like, a team-friendly deal whenever he signed it. We forget about that. It was a team-friendly deal whenever he signed it. But this is the beauty of sports, I think. Mm-hmm. This is, like, you can go from being a zero to a hero. And if Lance McCullers, like, hey, he's worked really hard to get back here. He has had injuries. They weren't mysterious injuries. They weren't fake. I mean, it's surgery and multiple surgeries. So I admire the work. I tip my cap to him. Yes, we're going to make fun of him always. But I admire what he has done to get back to this moment. And if he goes from being, like, serviceable in this rotation, like, if he's a number 3, number 4 starter for you and is healthy the rest of the year, I think that the fan base will flip on the mocking and ridiculing and appreciate what he did for the organization.
I think even just if he's great on Saturday, like, there's just going to be a level of excitement to see him back in the rotation. And we saw Wisniewski is getting skipped for a start. Sounds like he'll make his next one as planned. I guess he was just tired, but they're trying to be a little precautionary about it. So does feel like the return, the timing of the McCullers return is important, just in case it is a more, you know, serious injury. We know the Astros lie to us all the time about injuries, so, like, we have to wait and see. With Wisniewski, I'll believe when he's on the mound the next time I see it, actually. But McCullers back out there on Saturday. What are fair expectations for Lance? Like, what should we be expecting for him? He's been pretty good in the minors. Not a lot of contact, a lot of strikeouts. Like, the numbers look like the old Lance McCullers.
Yeah.
In the minors. But, this is essentially another minor league game against the White Sox, his first start. But, like,
that's your favorite team.
No, it's not.
I know it's not. I'm curious what the weather is like Sunday in Chicago. Now that I think about it, like, hopefully it's not a cool afternoon. Like, I don't want that. Oh, no. The high's 55. The high's 55 on Sunday.
It's going to be a little cool.
So they're going to expose him to the elements
whenever
he makes his first start at the scene of the crime. I don't love that. I didn't realize that until this very moment. But expectations. I don't think we should have expectations for Lance. Like, I don't think it's fair. I don't think it's fair to put, well, he's going to be a 3.75 ERA guy. He's going to be a sub-4 ERA guy. Like, I don't think that that's fair to him. He hasn't pitched since the World Series in 2022. Like, it's nearly 3 years, 2.5 years since Lance McCullers has been on the mound. He's had major surgery since that last time we saw him on a Major League Baseball mound. He's a bit older now than the last time we saw him. I don't think it's fair to put expectations on Lance. And anybody's like, oh, he's going to do this. They're guessing. They have no idea. Whether it's clickbait or look at me, this is what he's going to do. No one has any clue what Lance McCullers is going to do at the big league level. Not pitching in baseball for 2.5 years can have a very negative effect. We see pitchers that enter their 30s that go downhill once they enter their 30s. And he is coming off a major surgery. Mm-hmm. And we've seen pitchers who are coming off major surgeries never be the same. So he has three different reasons of why he could never be the same. So putting any sort of expectation on Mocha McCullers, I think, would be very unfair.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I want him to be great. We want to see him to have great success. I know you're a fantasy player. In leagues where I have a joke of a deep bench, mm-hmm. I've picked him up in my leagues just to kind of be like, take a flyer on Lance McCullers. Why not? But there should be no expectations. Whatever he brings to you is just, it's just extra bonus for the Astros right now. And now maybe after 2 or 3 starts, we'll be doing this podcast and the conversation will change.
Sure.
If he goes out there and he's good for 3 starts, then like he raises the bar himself. But he said before Wednesday's day game, he said, quote, "There was once, maybe twice, when I thought, you know what, I may not be able to do it, and it would have been a pretty sad ending to my story." I mean, yeah. I mean, how many times did we feel close? We felt close last year that he was going to come back. I mean, he went from throwing and being ready to all of a sudden we're at spring training, and he's done. And then he's going to be out for the year. So the fact that he's out there, I think, is it's awesome, like you said, for him to get back to this moment. And then for the Astros, it's whatever he can just achieve just adds to it.
I mean, he could have very easily went the Strasburger out.
Yeah,
very easily. And no one would have blamed him for it. We'd have mocked him. We would have been like, this guy's stealing money, all of that. But if he retired this offseason, how many people would have been shocked by that?
No one.
I don't think anybody would have been shocked by that. So I do think that's why we should compliment Lance McCullers for this. There are a lot of people over the course of baseball history, a lot of pitchers over the course of baseball history that have been in similar situations as Lance. Early 30s, have made millions of dollars. They have no issue, like, you know, with money or anything like that, that would just move on with their lives and never pitch again. So what he is doing to position himself to pitch innings again for the Astros, again, is very admirable for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was on Will Kunkel's podcast that he said that he might even just retire at the end of this contract. Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't plan on playing baseball forever. So if you're already thinking about, well, once this contract wraps up, like I might be done myself, and maybe the injury timeline changes that. But he could have just walked away. So it's awesome that he's back. He's been around the team, and we saw, you know, when there would be, you know, bench clearing brawls basically, or near brawls, like he'd be charging out on the mound himself, like,
yeah,
against the Rangers. So like he's been around the team, so it's awesome that he's back.
Wasn't he the player rep too?
I think he was the player rep for a little bit.
Yeah. I kind of call BS on him, like, this will be my last contract. Because he very clearly shows that he loves the game. Because if he didn't love the game, I think he's not pitching ever again. I think he'd be Strasburg. I think he'd be Anthony Rendon and mailing it in. Like, to me, it's very clear he loves the game. He's been in the dugout whenever he's been hurt. You mentioned that he'll get a little bit, he'll chirp a little bit,
yep,
from the dugout. And then all the work he's had to put to get back to pitching. To me, it's very clear he loves the game. I also have this has nothing to do with Lance McCullers. You always hear these players like, oh, I think I'm going to retire early. Those are often the guys that last the longest. I remember Roy Oswalt saying that, like, early in his 30s. He's like, oh, I'm going to retire early. And he, like, hung around forever. Who's the most recent Astro? Like, oh, he's going to retire early. It's Charlie Morton. Charlie Morton's still pitching. So I don't think, if Lance is healthy, that this will be his final contract.
Yeah, the only thing I'll say for Lance is if he can walk out on his own terms with his injury history, I wonder if that'll be a lot more enticing for him to just to walk away. If he can finish the season healthy, win a World Series with the Houston Astros.
What if he's good, though?
Then he's definitely not
Then
retiring.
He's a $25 million a year pitcher.
Yeah, because even
he's going to leave that on the table, a business-savvy guy who's
entrepreneur
and all this.
If he was healthy for the next, like, what, year and a half, 2.5 years, however long his contract is, like, he's going to make money in the offseason. So, but it's great to see that Lance is back. Now, we got a lot of other stuff to get into. Let's start with the lineup change. So we see Jose Altuve says he needs 10 more seconds. So Jeremy Peña is now hitting leadoff. Jose Altuve hitting second. The early returns, very positive, including the leadoff home run in Wednesday's day game. We saw him getting on base and Altuve bringing him home. A lot of good things so far with Jeremy Peña in the leadoff spot. How do you feel about just the – when Altuve says, I want to move down, would Pena have been your first choice?
So I'm actually ticked off at Joe Espada for making the lineup change that day.
Okay.
Because I had a hot take that it's time to move Jose Altuve off of the leadoff spot that day. And his lineup was out before we got to that segment.
Oh.
So I was not happy with Joe Espada for stealing my thunder. Mm. Because I was ready. I had the tweet scheduled. I was ready to go. Jose Altuve should be moved off the leadoff spot. Think of the engagement that was going to get.
Would have done big
people
numbers.
Would have been ticked off at me. And how great would it have been if Espada does it the next day? Mm. So I'm really upset with him, but I'm also upset with myself.
Because you didn't fire the take.
I saved it for the show. Mm. I saved it for the show instead of putting it on Twitter that morning. And it's always a balance that I have. Like, what should I put on Twitter? What should I say for the show? And it's always like this internal dialogue. So I'm unhappy with myself, and I'm unhappy with Joe. Now, did Jose Altuve suggest it? Maybe. I'm not privy to those conversations. I don't know why they would lie to us, although they've lied to us plenty. Altuve has had a history of asking his manager to move down in the lineup. Remember the COVID year whenever he was struggling, he went to Dusty Baker's office and he said, you got to move me down. I think he had like sixth or seventh for like three or four games, and then they moved him back. I don't think that Jose Altuve is a natural leadoff man. He swings at a lot of pitches. He doesn't see a lot of pitches. He doesn't walk at all. So he doesn't have a high on-base percentage. Like Jeremy Pena actually has a higher on-base percentage than Jose Altuve. I think on-base percentage is the most important stat when you're talking about leadoff guys. There's the antiquated thought of, well, you have to have speed. I don't think you do. Mm-hmm. I don't think you need to have speed in the leadoff spot. I think, in fact, I can make an argument of why speed is not great in the leadoff spot. And it's mostly because of stealing bases. Like, you get thrown out on the bases when Yordan Alvarez is in the box. That's not great to have speed there. Obviously, you like it first to third, scoring from second, things like that. And if you tell me that I can have a guy with a 350 on-base percentage with speed and a guy with 350 on-base percentage that's as slow as me, well, give me the guy with speed. But to me, it breaks a tie. It should never be the end-all, be-all with the leadoff spot. But, no, I think that there's two – personally, if it were me, and I do think that batting orders are overrated, I'll argue you about it tooth and nail, but I think that they're overrated in baseball. If I was filling out the lineup card, I would probably go either Isak Pena or Pena Isak. I would bat Altuve third, and I like Yordan in the cleanup spot. I think it fits his profile. I think he likes driving in runs. I think he likes batting with people on base. To me, he's a guy who clears the table. He doesn't set the table. So I was perfectly okay with Altuve moving down. I'd move him down to three. And then the two natural guys in this lineup that could bat leadoff for me would be Pena. It would be Isak Paredes. Because Paredes has everything you want from a leadoff man except for the speed. Sees a lot of pitches, doesn't strike out much, walks a ton. And he actually has the highest on-base percentage on the team. So I would have no problem with Isak. I have no problem with Pena. I would even move Altuve down to third. Do I think it was Altuve's idea? Maybe. But it was also merited from a just purely scoring run point of view, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the Paredes one's interesting. I didn't think about that, about moving Altuve down to third. I mean, it's what's good for the player versus what's good for the lineup. Like, if Yordan Alvarez likes to hit third, like, does that matter if you're Joe Espada, if he wants to be in the third spot in the lineup versus being in the fourth spot?
I think it matters.
I think it does matter.
But his best numbers are in the cleanup spot.
Yeah, and that's where, like, and some of his best years have not been when he's hitting leadoff.
Well, he won the MVP. He was batting third.
Yeah, so I think having Paredes bat in front of Altuve would make a ton of sense. Honestly, I think I'd almost rather have Paredes lead off and then have Pena bat second. My only reasoning is if we have the same exact situation, Pena's on first base, it's a ground out near double play. Paredes is getting thrown out at first.
Sure.
If Pena's batting second, he's beating that throw out at least. So you still have a guy on base. So, like, not that that happens all the time, but I think Paredes leading off and then Pena, or Pena and then Paredes, would make a lot of sense. And honestly, it wouldn't shock me if we do see a change at some point again with more stuff. Joe Espada this year seems to be more open to tweaking things.
Yeah.
It feels like with Bregman gone, having Paredes, having Walker in the lineup, with, you know, Yiner struggling, feels like he's a little more willing to move things around a little bit.
Yeah, maybe he's getting comfortable in his own skin a bit as a manager. It doesn't feel like he has to listen to the suits upstairs and stuff like that. Potentially. It feels like they diminished the cleanup spot, though. Like, they just don't care about – they're like, oh, stack the guys in the top of the order and, you know, Yordan at bats and all of this stuff, which, Like, I get it. I get that, you know, why you would rather have Yordan get, you know, 20 more at-bats a year, whatever the math is on that. But I'm one that would sacrifice 20 more at-bats for more premium at-bats. Mm-hmm. Like, I want Yordan batting with people on base. I don't want him batting second with one out, nobody on, or batting third with two outs, nobody on. But that's kind of my old man curmudgeon take. I do think batting orders are very overrated. I don't think the difference between, like, the most optimal batting order and some random batting order is all that much. The left field thing is, I actually think there is, I think there's merit to that, because they actually talked about that in spring training. I remember listening. What's the podcast with Brzezinski? What's that called?
Intentional Talk?
Yeah, one. And they go around, like, every spring training, and they talk to, like, everybody that day. And I remember they were talking to, like, Dave Clark, and he was like, yeah, you know, we got to get Altuve in the dugout quickly because he's got to get up there, at, you know, to bat whenever he's, you know, leading off an inning, which only matters at home, right? Because mm-hmm. whenever you're visitors, you bat first. You're not in the field first. But this is something that they've actually been on their mind since spring training. Like, Dave Clark said it and Joe Espada said it. So I actually think it's real. I don't think it's some fake excuse.
Yeah, it's interesting. With Altuve, it feels like things have been approached in the media or have been intentionally portrayed as his idea. The move to left field was his idea.
Yeah.
But we found out later that that wasn't true.
Yeah.
He said eventually himself that the Astros came to him. This also being portrayed like it was Jose Altuve's idea. My guess is there's just more collaboration, but, like, it really feels like they're more like, hey, dude, like, let's give you another 10 seconds. Also, we want to see Pena in the leadoff spot. We think it makes our lineup better.
Uh-huh.
Just like with him in left field, it's because they knew metrically he was no longer a good second baseman, and the timing of it came out just as, oh, he's going to move to left field for Alex Bregman. We found out that that wasn't true,
yeah.
That he was moving to left field before Alex Bregman was even a question.
Yeah, you're picking up what I'm putting down there a bit.
Because
now, from a managerial perspective, it's probably the best way to handle it. You tell mm-hmm. a little white lie, look at the great Jose Altuve that's willing to sacrifice for the team. He's willing to play left field because we're in on Alex Bregman. When in reality, they didn't want to play him at second base because he's one of the worst defensive second basemen in baseball the last three years. So was it really Altuve being like, hey, I'm a great teammate? Or was it, hey, Jose, we have two ground ball pitchers at the top of our rotation with Fromber and Hunter Brown, and we think we can win more games by hiding you in left field. And then when Wesneski pitches, who's a fly ball guy, let's now hide you at second base, try to limit the balls that are hit your way. And then this one, too, because it makes sense to move Jose Altuve off of the leadoff spot because he's not a great on-base percentage guy. Payne is better. Paredes is better. But, hey, instead of Jose – because, I mean, what would the headline say? Jose Altuve demoted. I mean, I think I tweeted it. Jose Altuve demoted from the leadoff spot, right? Or how about we send the message that Jose Altuve asked to bat second? Because now it makes him, you know, the legend of Jose Altuve grows.
It just grows and grows.
On one hand, like, I totally understand and I appreciate it, and that's the way you handle a legend and you handle the greatest Astro of all time. On the other hand, like, it is another example, potentially, of an organization that hasn't always been truthful to their fans. Not that that's, I mean, that, and that depends on what you think, if that matters. Like, do you care if they're telling you the truth? Do you care if they have a little bit of, you know, if they're hiding something, which I don't really care. They don't owe us anything, but I do think that that second part is coming to play a bit.
All right, before we get to our Blue Star of the Week and we talk about Payne, Jeremy Pena, because Jose Altuve has mentioned that as well. Today's show is brought to you by Blue Star Tequila, the first night harvested tequila. What does night harvesting mean? Well, let's find out.
In the highlands of Jalisco, as the fierce heat of day fades into dusk, the sun dips below the horizon, and our jimadores begin their work. Harvesting our precious agave azul beneath the glow of stars, while the night air is cool and calm. Away from the harsh heat of the sun, we protect our agave's freshness, locking in essential natural properties and sweetness, and preserving its unique flavor profile. This world-first practice has been warmly embraced by our jimadores, who relish the soothing embrace of evening's cool air as they work beneath the moonlight. 100% agave azul. Night harvested, unfiltered, and additive-free. We invite you to taste the Blue Star difference.
Let's talk about Jeremy Pena, Jeremy Branham, because Jose Altuve said to pay that man his money.
Yeah.
I saw your response. You said goodbye, Jeremy Pena, because Jose Altuve, everyone he says to pay, leaves.
Yeah.
So let's start with the idea of just paying Jeremy Pena. I don't think, like Hunter Brown, you've missed the boat, personally. I don't think that Jeremy Pena, now I think he's turning a corner, so you might be missing the boat. You might be running down the dock and get in this thing before it takes off to sea. But I think Jeremy Pena has not had the success that the Astros would have expected, that he would have expected, that the fans have expected since he won the World Series MVP. So I do think there's still room to pay Pena right now, that you can get him under contract if you wanted to, if you wanted to extend him for that long. Do you agree with that?
I wanted to extend Pena after his rookie year.
Totally agree.
And it really wasn't because of the, you know, playoff success. To me, it was more, I think Jeremy Pena is at minimum an average big league shortstop. I think he's a top 15 shortstop. I've never wavered off of that. I think Jeremy Pena still is a top 15 shortstop. I think he's been a top 15 shortstop every year of his career. Even though the offensive numbers haven't, you know, been great in any of his years. They've all been consistent, though. Like, Pena's been very consistent all 3 years in the bigs. This year, he's kind of taken a step and has been a better hitter so far. He's getting on base at a higher clip. I thought the time to do it was after his rookie year. Now, I'm very aggressive in paying players early. I think it makes sense. Now, at this point, it's more difficult to do. Because Pena now is in his first year of arbitration, so he's getting significantly more money than he'd be getting in his first 3 years under auto reserve. He also came up kind of old. Like, he was 24 years old in his rookie year. He's currently 27. So what kind of contract are we looking at to pay the man? Because obviously the Astros would want to buy out years of free agency. Jeremy Pena would obviously want a pretty substantial contract that would come close to what he would make on the open market in a few years, because he's got this year two more years. So I think it's more difficult now. I think the time has sailed on a Pena deal, because also Pena would want to be rewarded as very highly paid. Mm-hmm. And, like, what do you think Jeremy Pena is worth? Are you paying him Xander Bogaerts money? Like, that to me is too much. Obviously, you wouldn't pay him Javier Baez money. If you're buying out, how many free agent years do you want to buy out?
Four?
Okay. I was going to say three. Let's go with three. Because I think three is math that's easier to do.
Yeah.
So if you were to buy out three of his free agent years, that means you're giving him an extension for 6 years. Mm-hmm. Because he's got this year, two more, and then if you're buying out three of his free agent years, that's three more. So he's 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32. So you're paying him through the age of 32. That's, one, going to be a pretty steep cost to you. Mm-hmm. Secondly, the difficulty of doing that, now Jeremy Pena is going to enter a free agent, be a free agent for the first time after the age of 32. If you go with the 4 years, he's going to be a free agent for the first time after the age of 33.
That's kind
of
tough
for him. I think Pena's ask is going to be way higher than what the value is on Jeremy Pena. I do think they've missed the boat.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at, not obviously comparably, you know, but like the big name shortstops that have got signed in the last couple of years. So obviously Carlos Correa got his final contract with the Twins was 6 years, $200 million. That's $33 million. A year. Dansby Swanson that year before got a 7 year contract for $177 million. It's like what, $25 million a year, $26 million a little bit. But so, like, is he worth that? I would say he's pretty close to now. He's a really good defender. The bat's not great, but is he that much different than what Correa was when he hit free agency? Yes, but is he different than what Correa is now? I would say no.
Yeah, but Correa wasn't paid for what he is now.
No, exactly.
Correa was paid based on, really, he was really good his final year with the Astros, and then the injuries and all of that. So
he was great last year.
Pena won't have the value of Correa when Correa was in free agency. I mean, Correa was coveted, and I think Correa might have led the league in WAR.
Yeah.
His final year in Houston.
And plus, that free agency year was weird. I mean, I know Correa had the two different free agencies, but you had Correa, Swanson, Javi Baez, all hitting free agency at one time. A great shortstop class that really hasn't worked out for anyone besides Correa. But like, is, you know, 6 years, 150?
I think that's way too much. I don't think Jeremy Pena is a $25 million a year guy. I don't. To me, Jeremy Pena is at this stage. Now, sure, it's different if you did it after his rookie year, because you're probably getting him at a far less AAV. Every day that goes by, is a higher dollar that you're paying average annual. Mm. So if you would have done it after your rookie year, you're probably getting under $20 million.
Yeah, I mean, it's $4 million arbitration, so that's a pretty significant bump. I mean, Bo Bichette's making $10 million this year.
But he's right all, but Bichette's in the final year of his arbitration.
Yes.
So that's, I mean, it is a big bump, but now if Pena agrees to that, he's not entering free agency until after the age of 32 or 33.
And he's really not getting free agency then.
Yeah, and we've seen GMs, like, wisen up. Like, they're not paying those people anymore.
Yeah.
Like, the players they're getting paid are the players that are entering free agency, like, late 20s, like, beyond 30. Like, it's toast. And Pena right now would be entering free agency after his age 29 year. So I think Pena has a lot of leverage. I think his start at the end of the year probably helps him out as well, too. To me, you got to show aggression before they hit arbitration. Once they get into their first arbitration year, like, it becomes very, very difficult, in my opinion, to lock them up. And then, like, I like Pena.
And we've talked about Cam Smith with this. Like, pay Cam Smith.
Sure.
You should pay him right now.
If you have conviction with a player, you should have no fear of paying them early. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's how you get team-friendly deals. Yordan Alvarez is a good example of this. Jose Altuve did it twice. Alex Bregman did it. And people always push back and be like, well, John Singleton did it. Yeah, that's okay. Like, you're going to swing and miss on a couple of players. Mm-hmm. But add them all up. Like, add up John Singleton and Jose Altuve. You got Jose Altuve, whenever he won the MVP, on the biggest team-friendly MVP contract in the history of the game.
Yeah.
So just bake in John Singleton's contract with Jose Altuve, and you still have an unbelievable deal for Jose Altuve. So you're going to swing and miss when you do this because you have less information, but in the long run, you come out ahead. At this point, I think it's – and $25 million, I don't know if Payne is a $25 million a year player. Will he get it in free agency? Yes. But are you a winning team when you're paying Pena $25 million a year? I don't think so. I think at this point, Pena is the kind of guy that 6 years with the organization, he leaves you after that 6 year. You probably give him a qualifying offer. He's going to say no. You get the compensation pick, which if you're not in the competitive balance tax, it'll be a first-round draft. Will be after the first round. Or you could do what they did with Kyle Tucker, and you trade him. You trade him entering that final year of his deal. So I'm more in that boat with Jeremy Pena at this point. Would have liked to do it a few years ago, mm-hmm. but at this point, I think you're too far along. I don't want to pay Pena $25, $30 million. Like him, don't love him at $25, $30.
That's fair. Also, you have this guy named Bryce Matthews, who in his last 11 games in Sugar Land's hitting .308, three home runs, seven RBIs, three stolen bases. This is from the time that we're doing the recording of this podcast. Do you think we see him at second base this year? And do you think he is a option for part of the reason why you don't pay Pena? Is because he could be your shortstop.
It's a loaded question. I would say no on the second.
Okay.
I would say no on the. I don't think they're viewing Bryce Matthews as the future everyday shortstop.
Okay.
At all. I wondered to myself if part of the move for Altuve to left field was for Bryce Matthews, and I'm not even there. I think that was strictly big league level ground ball pitchers. Let's hide Altuve to left field and try to get him to touch the baseball defensively as little as we possibly can. Matthews is intriguing, but he strikes out a lot. Mm-hmm. I'm not 100% convinced Bryce Matthews can handle big league pitching at this stage of his development. And he's still young. Like, I mean, this isn't a decision that you need to be making right now. His numbers have been better recently. He still strikes out a ton. If he could cut his strikeout rate, which is a huge ask, in half, okay, I'm confident he's a big league player because he has good, like, he has solid power. He's super athletic. He steals a lot of bases. The defense on him was kind of questionable. I think that's a big reason why they moved him to second because they view that more as his path to the big leagues. I don't think they view him as a big league shortstop. There was even conversations when he was drafted if he would stay on the dirt. Yeah. There was a lot of people thinking that he would have to be moved to the outfield because of his defense. I think you can get away with him at second. And it would be rangy. It's just, you know, sometimes he's not sure-handed, great with the glove. My biggest fear with him is the strikeout rate. That's way too high right now. And it's not going to get better in the bigs. Like, you're striking out 40% of the time in AAA. What do you think it's going to be in the bigs?
55%.
Yeah. So that is the one area of his game where he has to completely revamp himself, get better at touching the baseball a little bit. And with his speed, just touching the baseball would probably get him a few more hits too. Now, him playing second base this year, I wouldn't completely rule out. If he stays, like, on a heater and he shows development in his offensive game, and look, it's his first full year in AAA.
Yeah.
Like, players get better. Players develop. So it sounds like I'm crushing the guy right now. But that's just the area that he needs to get better to become a big leaguer, and hopefully he gets better at that spot. him playing at second base is going to depend on the production they're getting from Dubon and Rodgers. Mm-hmm. If Dubon and Rodgers are handling the position and it's fine and it's not killing them, I don't think that we see Bryce Matthews at second base this year. Now, if they're killing you offensively and neither one can win the job and you're looking at a 625 OPS combined between those two guys and Matthews is crushing it in Sugar Land, then you see him. So that's dependent like on how the next 2-3 months go.
All right, before we wrap up today, let's do our Blue Star of the Week. It's going to be how we wrap up the show every single week. So over the last 6-7 days, who has been the best player for the Houston Astros? I'm just going to keep rolling. For me, it's going to be the guy who keeps, well, we're talking about the lineup change. We're talking about paying him. It's Jeremy Peña. He's been phenomenal over the last week, 6-for-18 going into Wednesday's game. Wednesday's game, he also had a leadoff homer in that one as well. So he's getting RBIs, he's getting on base, and he's adjusted well to being the new leadoff man. Blue Star Tequila is the world's first night harvest tequila. Blue Star Tequila is intentionally unfiltered and additive-free, the way nature intended. Nothing added, nothing taken away. They have bold, full-bodied flavors, including their natural honey reposado blend with subtle sweet layers of caramel, vanilla, and honey intertwined with oak spices. They source the natural honey from this local farmer not far from the distillery in Jalisco. Today's show brought to you by Blue Star Tequila. Thanks for jumping on, guys. We appreciate you very much. That does it for this episode of Inside the Icebox. We'll be back next week with the latest on your Houston Astros. Peace.